Welcome to the Retro Asylum.
Hi there guys, this is Andy Godoy from the Retro Asylum podcast. This is a pre-announcement to the main podcast. Now, the reason we're doing this is because we've had some fantastic news which came out after we've done the edit for the podcast, so I thought I'd throw this in. And I also want to give a few special thanks to a few people as well before we begin the show. Now, first of all, we are going on tour. The UK's number one retro gaming podcast has got the Retro Asylum Live Podcast Tour 2014. And I'll tell you where you can actually come and watch us. Now, we will be performing at some of the biggest retro gaming events out there. There will be some more retro gaming events that we will be adding to the tour. But for the time being, these are the ones we've got. So first up, we've got Geek, which is at Margate on the 22nd of February at the Winter Gardens. We will be performing there on Saturday. Next up, we've got Play Expo, which is in Blackpool. We'll be there on the 3rd of May, which is a Saturday, performing at 3 o'clock, and this is at Norbrick Castle. And then we've got our very own Retromania 2, which will be held at PlayNation Games in Croydon on the 26th of May, which is a bank holiday Monday. And that will be from 10 in the morning till 10 at night. And it won't just be us performing there. We've got a Retro Grade Show, and we've also got Nintendo Sushi. Further on, we have got NERG 2014, which is at Tyne and Wear on the 5th of July at Gateshead Stadium. And recently just announced, we will also be performing at Revival, which will be at Wolverhampton Racecourse on the 9th of August. So guys, if you want to support us and you enjoy the show and you enjoy retro gaming, then this is the best way to actually listen to us and support us, is go to these events, enjoy the show, and then listen to the podcast. You know, you'll find us walking around with, you know, Retro Asylum t-shirts. You know, come and join us, come and talk to us, have a drink with us, and then join in the live podcast, because we will be doing a bit of audience participation. So we're really looking forward to this, guys. Can't wait for this. So again, please support us. Now, next up, guys, we've got the main podcast, and it is episode 69, and it's Paul Monahan, who talks about the Atari ST and the amazing cover, which was done by Sam, aka Mr. Sid. And I love this cover. I think it's fantastic. And yeah, guys, sit back and enjoy the show.
Hello everybody, welcome to episode 69 of Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast. My name is Paul, also known as Mog79 on the Retro Asylum forums, or you can follow me on Twitter as PDMonPaul. Now, what I want to talk about today is the Atari ST, a computer that we've not really mentioned that much about on the podcast, but it holds a special place in my heart because it was the first computer I ever owned, so I've got a lot of great memories from the games that I've played, you know, on the ST all those years ago. Now, before I get to that, just want to tell you a little bit about what I've been up to, a few announcements to do with Retro Asylum, and then obviously get on to the main part of the show. Now, what I've been up to is, thanks to my wife, because I have no DIY skills at all, she's decorated my games room for me, which I'm very grateful, so thanks to her. And because of that, now I've got my own gaming space with all my games and machines, you know, out, set up and everything. And it just looks really nice. I managed to get a bit of artwork up as well, a few pictures that I bought at Play Expo last October, which was a great day out, especially as I previously mentioned, got to meet some of the guys from Retro Asylum there, and a few other people speak to on Twitter. Now I've finally got my room set up, finally got my Commodore 64 out of its box, and it's got its pride of place next to my TV. So I've been buying a few games for that, because as I explained in the main part of this podcast, never actually owned a 8-bit machine. A lot of my memories were around at friends' houses. So I've just picked up a few games for that. Salamander, Silkworm, a game called Finders Keepers. That's meant to be a great little budget type game. Then also I've been picking up a few Mega Drive games because the value of the Super Nintendo games are still really, really high. So I've managed to pick up a Mortal Kombat 3 and Ms. Pac-Man. And now it's just really a case of getting a day together and actually trying out some of these games I've bought. Now I've actually got the space to enjoy them. Now we have got a few site announcements. One offer for our listeners, which is, you know, a great offer really. It's from funstock.co.uk. Now, if you go onto their website and enter the promo code ASYLUM, you can get 10% off your order. Now, when I was at Play Expo in last October, they were there, and they've got a great mixture of retro gaming related stuff. You've got obviously the plug and play joysticks, the Neo Geo X console. You've got obviously a load of handhelds with built-in games as well, so really is a great offer. Definitely head over there and check it out. Now the next news is something that all the Retro Asylum team are excited about, and that's obviously taking, well, the show on the road, as the saying goes. In 2014, Retro Asylum will be getting bigger and better, and we're going to be doing a couple of live podcasts while at some of the retro events. Now, the first one we'll be recording a live podcast at is at Geek 2014. That's down in Margate. You can get the information on geek2014.co.uk. You know, I'll tell you a little bit more about the plans that we've got going down there. And that's on the 21st to the 23rd of February. Yeah, we're going to be there on the 22nd. So obviously a chance to say hi to some of the team and maybe get involved in a bit of a podcast recording. Also, another live event is going to be at NERG 2014 on the 5th and 6th of July. It's up in Gateshead, and we'll be up there on the Saturday. Obviously, for more information, check out last week's episode, which was a special talking about the entire event. We also have a listener competition running at the moment. Aaron White on Twitter, his username is AaronUB4T, so that's just Aaron then UB4T, has been kind enough to donate some ocean goodies for this competition. All you've got to do to enter is just send a tweet with a hashtag Retro Asylum Podcast saying, "I want to win the ocean goodies because," so that's hashtag Retro Asylum Podcast, "I want to win the ocean goodies because I'm being with a chance to obviously win these great ocean prizes." And the thing is, with Aaron, one thing that stands out so much is his passion for things, you know, Commodore wise. And we've had so many conversations about some of the great ocean games. So he's a really, really nice guy and definitely worth a follow. Now, just before I go on to the main show, just a shout out to our sponsors for this week. Dino Dini, Aaron White, Splatty, Uniforex, Michael Hay and Michael Keith. So a big thank you to them, obviously. All donations, keeping the show going. And like I briefly mentioned in the magazine podcast episode, it's a great weekly dose of just retro chat and just, you know, something fun to listen to and just obviously remember those gaming memories. Anyway, now it's time to get onto the main part of the podcast, and that's my look back at the Atari ST. When I was 10, I remember it was Christmas 1989 when I actually got my first ever computer. Before then, I'd been playing games, you know, for a few years, going around to friends' houses, playing on Spectrums, Commodore 64s, and my best friend, they had Amstrad 464 that I spent a lot of time on, played a load of great games, and I remember coming up towards Christmas time, I really, really was pestering for an Amstrad 464, and when it came down to Christmas Day in 1989, I remember coming downstairs and seeing this massive box underneath the Christmas tree, and thinking, okay, this is my big, big present, see what it is. And I remember my mum saying, it's from me, it's also from my grandma and granddad. So there I am, ripping open the box, and there it is, the Atari 520 STE, that they later told me we had to wait for a delivery or something. I'm sure they said it came from Holland, because it was the latest model of it, and they'd done the research, they'd been assured that it was a really good machine, powerful, and the big selling point as well, it came with 20 games in a cardboard sleeve, because it was classed as the power pack. Also with that, got, you know, the Atari mouse, joystick, and it also came with an issue of ST Format, which then obviously led on to my love of magazines, something that I did a previous podcast episode on. But that was it. That was my first time I'd opened my first ever computer. Just thought, wow. So first thing you do as a kid, you're thinking, brilliant, new machine. Let's see what's come with it, games-wise. And I recognised quite a few of the titles straight away from playing them on 8-bit computers, titles such as Outrun, Bomb Jack, Double Dragon, and I know Swainy has a lot of love for Double Dragon, and again, it's something I'd spent a lot of time playing on the arcades, so I'm thinking, excellent. And I'm sure we've all been there before. You get your big present, and you see all the other presents there, and you've got people going, are you not opening your other stuff? You're like, yeah, okay, well, let's see what else is there. Okay. And then it was a case of, okay, let's get this set up. And I had a bit of an idea, obviously, how to get a computer set up. I'd seen friends do it and everything. So it's straight upstairs to my bedroom, getting out the ST, getting it all set up and getting ready for a lot of good memories over the next few years. Now, before I go back to my own memories of it, just think it's probably the best time to obviously tell you all a little bit about the history of the Atari ST. And obviously I've done a little bit of research, but I'm sure there's people out there who are obviously a lot better looking to every single fact and everything. So it's, like I say, just a quick brief overview before continuing my own experiences with the ST. So I've read that in January 1984, Jack Tramiel left Commodore International and bought Atari's consumer division from Warner Brothers. Obviously around that time the whole computer game crash had gone on. You know, Atari were losing a ton of money. There's obviously the infamous story about burying all the copies of E.T. for the Atari 2600 in the desert. So, in July 84, it was reported that Atari was losing $1 million a day, which just is a crazy amount nowadays. So even back then, you know, you're thinking now, well, 30 years ago this year, it just would make no sense to obviously run a company like that. So Jack and a few other ex-employees of Commodore obviously set up their own company, going up against Commodore, and then that obviously led to a dispute over trade secrets, as Commodore then attempted to sue Jack Tramiel to try and just stop him from obviously coming up with his own machine and everything. This actually got settled out of court in 1987, but this dispute allowed Atari to get the chance to get the ST first to market, which, just basically like any business, getting first to market can be such a big boost, you know, to what you're selling. Now, over the next couple of years, there have been a few different models of the ST, but it was late 1989 that the 520 STE and the 1040 STE were released, which featured a much improved colour palette, just over 4,000 colours compared to 512 of the original ST. So obviously you've got a lot greater scope there. But the thing is, you were still limited to just 16 colours in this lowest resolution. And the other thing is, not many games were actually made exclusively for the STE. Just basically relating it to myself, I remember ordering games from mail order companies and also reading reviews in magazines where it'd be a case of this one not run on the STE. Yes, sometimes got the stickers on the box, and it didn't really happen that often. But obviously around that time, while the STE was, you know, a new machine, there were, you know, a few problems there. So anyway, with the STE, you obviously have a superior sound and colours. Now, the STE was the first home computer with built-in MIDI ports, used with the popular music programme Cubase, something that we had when I was at secondary school, that we used obviously in music class. I wasn't good at using it at all. Quite a few lessons there, you'd just be able to put a few notes on the screen and, you know, press play and get to hear a bit, but I've just not got any, you know, melody or rhythm in my bones, so I couldn't really make anything that great. Now, even though I was awful with my musical talent, there's obviously a lot of proper music artists out there who use the ST. Just a few names like Utah Saints, who used to be really big in the early 90s, hopefully some of you have heard of them, 808 State, Fatboy Slim, obviously still going today, and then obviously the band Atari, Teenage Riot, were named after the computer. Now, just sticking with the whole MIDI port, something I didn't know until I was researching this, and this is something I've definitely got to check out. There was a game that came out called MIDI Maze. Now, this allowed quite a few Atari STs to be linked up through the MIDI ports to play this MIDI Maze game, which was a first-person shooter set up like Faceball 2000. I've seen pictures of that when it came out. It was like Faceball 2000. I know we've done one on the Game Boy and also on the Super Nintendo. And just the idea of having, you know, so many players linked together, bearing in mind, you know, we're talking like the start of the 90s, is really, really groundbreaking. And I've spoke to a couple of people on Twitter and showed me a few pictures of the setup. And it is something now that I really want to experience firsthand. Hopefully now, by going to you know, more of these retro events this year, I'll get the chance to do that. While I've been working on this episode, I've just realised how much over the last 25 years the Atari ST has helped shape my gaming history to where it is nowadays. Now, as stated, the games that I got with my ST, some of them I'd played, you know, be it in the arcades or on 8-bit systems. And in the early days of the ST, it really was a case of 8-bit conversions, obviously nicer graphics, better sound, and some of Atari's own games such as Joust, Crystal Castles, you know, things that I've played. But for me, the big thing was to be playing these games, what I thought, obviously at the time, is more or less arcade perfect. Things like Outrun, and again, now when I look back at that, I was very, very naive saying arcade perfect, but last time I played it, you know, it was a good few years ago. But to be able to play things like Double Dragon, Golden Axe, without obviously having to spend, you know, coin after coin on it, and just be able to obviously play through it, play it again and again. It, you know, have your friends around going on these games with you. And again, like when we were kids, you'd have to either wait for the fairground to come round to get a proper, you know, range of games to go on. I know, obviously, like we've discussed previously, Chip Shop's always had a couple of games, but this for me was a chance to be playing so many arcade conversions. One of the games that I spent a lot of time on as soon as I got me at ST was Gauntlet 2. Something that I've got a lot of great memories from, so many levels to play through, and just it almost seemed like never ending, really. It's not just the arcade conversion memories that I've got for me ST. It's, as there's already been an episode in this, I'm only just going to briefly touch upon it, but it's the whole point and click genre, something that quite a few of us feel really, really strongly about. Now, one of the first point and click games that I played, and again, I've mentioned this, so it's only just going to briefly mention it, was Zap McCracken, a great LucasArts game. If anyone's still not checked it out, definitely play it. Some really great puzzles on there. But obviously one of the most famous point-and-click adventures was first played by me on my Atari ST, and that was the first Secret of Monkey Island. Again, another great game. But not only that, one of them, a bit different, not LucasArts, was the first Leisure Suit Larry game. Now, when I played Leisure Suit Larry, it was, God, must have been about 11, and I remember playing it across the road. My friend had an Atari ST as well, and obviously it was full of more adult humour, obviously not great graphics, you know, a bit cartoony, and seeing it was set for adults, we had some security questions to try and basically keep kids away from it, really. So it'd just be things like general knowledge questions, and if you got, say, 5 right, then you get the full uncut version with digital pictures of breasts, say. It's been quite a long time since I've played it, but obviously if you only get, say, no questions right, only 1 right, you know, we just go, hang on a minute, you must be a child. And I remember, obviously, we'd go to our parents and we'd be asking them these general knowledge questions, you know, just out of the blue. And they must just think, oh, look at that, must be some sort of homework. But being that age, really, it was just to try and, you know, get a look at some digital pictures of breasts. It's a bit embarrassing now saying that and thinking back. But it was a different time, you know, the internet wasn't there, you know, I think the things you see just in everyday music videos or whatever, it was a lot worse than what you got at Leisure Suit Larry, a game that was meant to be for adults. But anyway, on with obviously discussing games and not just the state of, well, modern day life. I'm just going to briefly go back to the arcade conversions, only because it's just something I feel like I've not touched on, and that's obviously the games of Sega. Now, like I say, I've already mentioned a couple of them, such as Outrun and Afterburner, but there were quite a few others available for the ST, which I then later played and added to my retro games collection for my Mega Drive, and some of these games obviously have been playing quite recently. And even though I thought they were good on the ST, they do lose something on a home computer. But you still got, like I say, I've mentioned Golden Axe, but Altered Beast was on there, and Alien Storm. Again, not quite as good as the Mega Drive version, you know, but it definitely loses something that a console brings. But these arcade conversions were a lot better than these other two that I'm just going to quickly mention. Two of my favourite games, really, by Capcom in the arcades. The first one, Final Fight, always been one of my favourite games. Now, I remember getting this one Easter for an Easter present, and it was obviously Final Fight for me ST. came obviously in the big box and everything, and the conversion of it was just horrible, really jerky. I can't remember if it had the same level missing that the Super Nintendo version had, but it was awful. But again, it's all that I had in regards to being able to play it all the time. And the other game, I was so happy when this came out, because at the time I didn't have a Super Nintendo, but it was a Street Fighter 2. And I remember buying this thinking, brilliant, I can finally get my skills, you know, to a really suitable level. I'll be able to go around to my mates, go on his Super Nintendo and beat him. Sadly, I think it came on four discs, and there were so many loading times in between stages, and trying to play Street Fighter 2 with a joystick was just absolutely ridiculous. The graphics were horrible, the colours were really, really dark, and I think I only played it a few times, and that was about £25 wasted, really. Luckily, I think about 6-7 months down the line, I finally got my Super Nintendo, but obviously not here to discuss that today. Now, moving on to the games that obviously helped sell the Atari ST, the biggest, you know, AAA title really that came out for the ST before any other machines, and one of my favourite games of all time is Dungeon Master. You speak to anyone about the Atari ST, and there's no, you know, it's going to come up in conversation, definitely. Now, at the time, I was still collecting the older Steve Jackson Ian Livingstone Fighting Fantasy books, so I was really into all the, you know, wizard sorcery and all that sort of fantasy realm. And this game just summed everything up, you know, going into dungeons, making a party of, you know, four different adventurers, so many different possibilities, you know, everyone having different weapons, different skills, leveling up magic and everything. And obviously that led on to my, you know, love of RPGs, and I was quite a few people in the Retro Asylum team that don't like RPGs, but I still love them, you know, nowadays. But the thing is, obviously with Dungeon Master, it was didn't have any music. You'd just be going down the corridors controlling your team, you know, by clicking on the mouse, and all the time it'd be like, right, playing it in the dark, and you're going around a corner, and then all of a sudden, face to face with a mummy or one of the other monsters screaming at you, scares you to death. You know, you're playing games in the dark. Now, Dungeon Master was a massive game. I still never completed it. It was always just one of those that we spent so much time on. I'd go across the road again to my friends, and we'd be just staying. And I remember one summer holidays, you know, it must have been like 11, something like that. And all the time, you'd have your other friends going out, you know, playing football or whatever, and we'd be like, no, we're going to stay in. Now, for me, that was great. Back as a kid, I had horrible hay fever, so it was a perfect excuse to just go, yeah, I can't go outside, I'm going to be sneezing and just getting, feeling all ill and everything, so I'll just stay in. So, just perfect. Hours and hours spent on Dungeon Master. Now, that's still one of my all-time favourite games. Something I own again on the Super Nintendo, but again, through lack of a mouse, it's nowhere near as good. Now, there was also an expansion pack called Chaos Strikes Back that came out for the Atari ST, and I remember going to one of the local game shops in Bolton, going halves with the same friend to buy this expansion pack, you know, straight away. Quite a bit of time spent on it, and it's something that really, if I do get around to getting an ST again, it's one of those must-own games. I can't recommend this game highly enough. Another couple of the big titles for the Atari ST. Game I had, couldn't really get into it that much. So Carrier Command, obviously had, like, you know, 3D type graphics, obviously like massive landscapes, places to explore, and then obviously you had the flight simulator games that were really, really popular. Again, never ever got into them. I remember getting a couple on copy off an acquaintance, and one of my friends came around and he was really, really into them. I mean, for me, they just seem really boring. Sat there, you know, you've just got like cockpit controls, and I know they just, I never understood why they were so popular. Really, really, you know, didn't, still don't to this day. But quickly going back to the sort of games like Carrier Command in those like massive open worlds, two that I forgot about because I've not played them for so long. A game called Hunter and a game called Midwinter 2. And both of these were, you know, you're like a special agent. You're on an island and there's loads of different vehicles you can get in, drive around in, people to assassinate, other missions to complete, surveillance and things. It reminds me of very basic version of how Far Cry 3 is. Now, I completed that last year on a PS3 and I thought, wow, what an amazing game. You know, if anyone who's not played Far Cry 3, really, really recommend it. Now, I do want to play this Midwinter 2 and Hunter again. You know, we both came out on the Amiga as well, and we had such an open world. You didn't have to do some missions, you know, like all in order, you know, you had a bit more scope, and you know, it's, you're going back to very early 90s, so it was quite a breakthrough type of game. Some of my favourite games on the Atari ST came from the Bitmap Brothers. Now, one of the first games of theirs I actually played was Xenon 2, and the thing that stood out straight away was music, that was obviously by Bomb the Bass, but it was such a strong piece of dance music, and that gave me a first taste of the excellent intros, you know, music wise that the Bitmap Brothers would be known for. Other ones that, you know, most of us have discussed so much, intros to Gods, Speedball 2, one of my favourite games still years on, and definitely one of my favourite pieces of intro music. One of the later games in the ST's life, Chaos Engine. I know obviously a lot of people relate that to the Amiga, but for me it was the Atari ST I first played that. And then another one, Magic Pockets, which featured Betty Boo, was a popular song, I think, when it came out, probably about 90, possibly 91. But this was just so fun to be playing these games, spent absolute hours on them. Some of them played the demos first of all, you know, by magazine cover discs. I think with Chaos Engine I may have actually bought that from the shops, and you know, it's something now you look back on the key titles for the Atari ST, and those are ones that that people usually think about. Just while we're on, you know, key Atari ST titles, some of us that I absolutely loved, SimCity and Populous, they got me into all the real-time strategy type games. Well, being able to use a mouse certainly helped, you know, because I wouldn't really want to be playing games like that with either a keyboard or a joystick. Another great game, which came out in so many different systems but was so massive, was Lemmings. Now, that as you know, as we all know, starts off nice and simple. Before you know it, levels, you know, soon get quite difficult with all sorts of different lemmings and everything. But it was just one of those sort of, as a kid, like AAA title, everyone knew what Lemmings was. In my local independent game shop in Wigan, he's been, you know, working in game shops for years, and he's still got some cardboard standees for Lemmings from when he had game shops, you know, at that time. And I just look at it, and it just brings back so many memories straight away, just seeing, you know, like the Lemmings coming down, holding up the umbrellas as like the little parachutes. And again, not a game I've played for a very, very long time, but when I think back now, the amount of hours spent, you know, some of these levels, getting really, really frustrated and just going, God, how do I actually get on to the next one? You know, just hurry up, move. No, don't walk that way. And, you know, we've all been there. A few other key titles that I first played on the ST. A platform game called Harlequin, done by Gremlin. Not many people supposed to have actually played this game, but I absolutely loved it. I've been watching a few YouTube clips recently, and that's again something that I'd love to play again. It may be worth, you know, other listeners out there just having a quick look at it. It's got some great music as well. One of the probably most important games that I've played, because this is an hour spent on it, you know, following on from sequels, it's more months played on it, and that's Champ Manager. When that came out on the Atari ST, that's the first system I played it on, and then obviously it went on to the Amiga, and then, you know, onto the PC versus Champ Manager, then Football Manager, and it got to the stage where the last couple of years I've just not bought it. If anyone who's listening is a, you know, Championship Manager, Football Manager fan, then I'm sure we can all relate to your life just disappearing on that game. But it just summed up a great game, you know, quite a lot of stuff you can do, the whole buying and selling of players, but obviously I could do an entire podcast episode just on a Champ Manager and Football Manager. Another game that stood out, I think this came out about 1991, was Another World. Came out before Flashback on the Amiga, but obviously it was the same company, similar graphic style. And it was great. I mean, you could tell straight away, there's no way they could be doing this really like on an 8-bit machine. And it just showed off, you know, the graphics that the Atari ST could do and everything. I've obviously mentioned Dungeon Master, which is, again, one of the standout Atari ST games. But as I said, I was, what, 11, possibly 12 around the time when I got my ST. Well, still had my ST. And we brought out Hero Quest and Space Crusade based on the board games. And at the time, like I mentioned just a little bit earlier, I was really into all my fantasy type things like that. So obviously I had to get those games for my ST. And yeah, they were okay. I know Hero Quest came out on the 8-bit computers as well. But that's obviously all my memories are for the ST version. The previous podcast episode that I did was on my memories of computer magazines. Now, obviously, I'm not really going to go into that now, but as I mentioned on that episode, there was quite a few magazines available for the Atari ST, the main ones being ST Format and ST Action. Now, one thing I didn't actually touch upon in that episode was, in any of the magazines, really, there was always loads and loads of mail order companies advertising, you know, the latest titles, for, you know, for quite a few different systems. One company that was going for absolutely ages was Special Reserve. There's a load of others that I can't really recall right now. But I think the thing was, it was just a case of no internet back then. So if you wanted to buy your games mail order. It was either sending a postal order down or a check. Now, I remember thinking this must have been like 1990 because I'd not had my Terrace tea that long. I remember ordering, I think it was Midnight Resistance, and sent off a check and everything. Well, my mum did. And then that company got liquidated. There's quite a few companies went under because there were so many listed. So there's only really a few you could trust. But the only reason I'm pointing that out really was because it leads on to the other side of getting games. I'm not going to go into this in a great amount of detail because in a previous episode, I know it's already been discussed, but that's obviously software piracy. Now, at the time, you know, we were kids, didn't have a lot of money. You wanted to play a load of the latest games, and the best way to do that was obviously getting copies of them. You know, all you had to do was just get the old blank 3.5-inch floppies, get a program for UST, and then later Amiga, and you'd always be able to go to a few people at school who knew someone who knew someone, and they'd be like, okay, Here's a list of the latest games can get, and you know, you'd open it up and you think, brilliant, yeah, I'll have this, this, and this, and this, and this. I'll bring you the disc tomorrow, you know, and great. So the next day, well, the day after, you know, it'd be like, okay, straight back home, try some new games and everything. And they obviously spend a load of time playing them. And another thing that stands out for me, from obviously all the copy games, was, you know, if you've been cracked by different people, cheats put into them, such as, you know, your infinite lives, invincibility, level select, because I'm not great at games. Sadly, I think the older I'm getting, the worse I'm getting. I think my reflexes, which never have been great, I think are actually getting worse. But, you know, as a kid, you just want to be able to go, oh yeah, I've played that game, I've completed it, and this happens at the end. And that was a big thing, you know, by putting these cheats into the games, it gave you an opportunity to see the end of the game. I know some people may say, well, that spoils it, but, you know, it's just, some of the fun is obviously knowing where the story or where the game, you know, ends and how everything's wrapped up. I mean, just talk about the ending of a game. As previously mentioned, I got Double Dragon with my Atari ST, and as most of you all know, if you're playing Double Dragon 2 player, you have to end up fighting the other player, who's obviously playing as your brother, to try and win the heart of Marion. So I always remember playing against one of my friends, and it'd always be, okay, let's not use weapons against each other. So I'd say there's a baseball bat or a whip lying around. It's okay, we're just going to basically do the elbows or the punches or the kicks, no weapons. And he'd just end up battering me. So I'd always just try and cheat. Again, not proud of this. Try and use one of the bats or the whip. Still get beaten and just be really, really annoyed about it. Bit of a sore loser, not proud of that. But I think now, at the age of 34, I'm a little bit better than it, you know. But I don't know, I think a few of my friends may say, nope, you're still a bit of a bad loser at times. By the time 1993 came around, the Atari ST was starting to decline. The Amiga had the stranglehold on the home computer market. The Super Nintendo and Mega Drive and the whole console scene was a lot bigger. And obviously people slowed down making games for the Atari ST. Because there were still a few, you know, big titles still to, well, that was still out that year, and after it, you still had things like Cannon Fodder, previously mentioned as well, you know, the Champ Manager, Chaos Engine, but the last big, you know, release was Frontier Elite 2. I've never tried the Elite games, but I know there's a lot of listeners out there who absolutely love them. By that point as well, I'd also moved away from the Atari ST myself and gone on to a Super Nintendo for a while and then on to the Amiga 1200. What obviously didn't help matters was the fact that Atari had moved away from the Atari ST themselves onto the Atari Falcon, which sounded like a great, you know, computer. I remember reading about it again in a, you know, ST format around the time, and they were trying to concentrate on the Atari Jaguar as well. Now, as we all know, quite a few consoles came out around that time. You know, the 3DO, the Jaguar, Philips CDI, and a lot of them just absolutely bombed. And it was just more of a case of the Jaguar not doing anything. Obviously, the ST had gone, and as we know, and not going to go into it too much, obviously, Atari, you know, started to fade away. Anyway, I hope that, you know, some people out there found some of this interesting. I know a lot of it is just, you know, my own experiences, some of my old memories. And I look forward to doing some more episodes down the line. Okay, thanks for listening.